Welcome to The Learning Curve, your industry podcast on all things on enterprise learning.
In this episode of The Learning Curve with me, Kenny, we're going to be looking at learning and development within the maritime industry. With me today, I have L&D Superintendent of the Thome Group, Devish, and together we'll be exploring what his challenges are in applying learning and development to the maritime industry. So how do they deal with training on site and training abroad? So on location, in this case, specifically on ships. So it's a really exciting episode, and I hope you have as much fun listening to it as I have talking about it. So enjoy and smash the like button. Hi, and welcome to another podcast episode of The Learning Curve with me, Kenny. And today we have another very, very exciting topic. I was wondering on what the correct name is for this topic, but we decided on pretty much starting with a general naming of the topic, and that was learning development in the maritime industry, something that I think not very many people are familiar with, how the maritime industry does their learning. So for that, we have an expert with us, and that's Devish. Hi, Devish. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Kenneth. Thanks for the invite and super excited to be here.
Oh, and you can't believe how excited I am. I believe this is going to be another really fun podcast in which, you know, hopefully we will learn something new, something that we didn't know before. And of course, in terms of learning development, I think everybody will then have maybe a little bit better understanding of what the challenges are for learning and development in the maritime industry. So the first question, Devish, is of course, what is your connection to the maritime industry? Because in this case, you're stationed in New Delhi.
Yeah, indeed.
Right? And I believe you also grew up there, or where did you grow up?
So yeah, I mean, I'm born and did my schooling over here in Delhi. But then for my marine engineering, I moved to Glasgow, Scotland. And I completed my marine engineering from there. And after that, you can say I was a globetrotter because all the seven continents I have charted myself. So I'm a global citizen.
Wow, okay. Okay. Does that mean, since you made it to all the seven continents, that means you made it all to, also to Antarctica?
Yeah, not done, but you have been to Greenland and all.
So Antarctica was, you didn't quite make that one.
Yeah.
Okay, but now you grew up in India, in New Delhi. Where is the connection to maritime, to sailing? I mean, how did that develop? That's what gets me, because I've heard of, in my area, basically, most people that I've had contact with, you know, the classic, you know, computer engineering, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering. But given my location, I would normally think that something that has to do with maritime, there has to be an influence of somebody that lives on the coast and has, you know, like observed maritime. So where is your connection to the maritime industry? Was it in your childhood or something, or?
Kenneth, you are right. Like, you know, Delhi, I think the nearest beach will be 2,000 kilometers from here. So it's nothing like, you know, something I can get a cold breeze from the sea. But yeah, my father was an ex-Indian Navy. So he served in the Indian Navy. But he left when I was, I was only 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So he left the Indian Navy and he moved to an office job. But this is how, you know, the white uniform always fascinated me a lot. And it was all learning from him how the life is. But yeah, I tried to go into the Indian Navy, but unfortunately, I couldn't make it up for there. But I ended up in the Merchant Navy over here.
Okay, cool. Okay, so this is basically then handed down to you from your father. Then that's where you got your experience, your first knowledge in the maritime industry, and then you went into the Merchant Navy, correct?
Yeah, the Merchant Navy.
Okay. And then your career basically then through the course of 18 years, you've gone sailed on various types of merchant ships ranging from, I have it written down here, but I have no clue what it means. VLOC, what in the world is that? Could you please explain that to a non-expert?
Okay, so say like these are, we are basically carrying cargo. So these are ore carriers, specialized to carry the iron ore. And these are very large vessels, one of the largest vessels in the world. They can carry easily 400,000 tons of cargo in a single time.
Wow. Okay. What type, just to give us a feeling for the listeners out there, can you give us like a size description? So, I mean, you gave us weight and displacement, but how, what length and width are we talking about just to give a, get a feeling?
Sure, sure. So these were like 380 meter long. So almost like, you know, touching 400 meters. And the width was around very up till 60 meter easily. And believe me, when you are on the ship, when it is loaded with cargo, you are almost 22 meters deep inside the water when you are in the engine room.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So then the second, the follow-up question, though, is now you were introduced to the topic of maritime, you know, traveling and so forth, or basically that lifestyle through your father, but how many times were you on a ship before you said, okay, this is definitely the career path I want to go to? Did you have an opportunity? Did you do a lot of, in your youth, did you go on the ships prior to that? Or?
No, I never been on a ship.
No?
And I saw the ship just from the far away. But you know something, it's like I mentioned, the sea is always fascinating. I don't know, it was I'll say vitamin C, you know, normally how we see if it is, say vitamin C was passed on to me and it's in my blood, I think.
Okay, because I was going to say there's no other way to explain it because I was just thinking, you know, there's one thing about, you know, listening and hearing about it, but then to actually experience, especially, you know, going out onto the ocean and possibly experiencing seasickness, or, you know, it would be kind of like... somebody that works on skyscrapers, but who is afraid of heights, you know, turns out. So, so in this case, it was literally in your blood and you went to school and then, stepped on your first ship. And, since then traveled the earth, all ends of the earth. And, for 18 years and now you've changed your career though. So you spent like almost a decade serving as a chief engineer. And now you work for the Tome Group and are responsible for learning and development. So can you tell us a little bit more about your current job or your current employer, the if I pronounce that correctly, Tome Group? Give us a little bit of background on them.
Okay, sure. So let me tell you about the company first, because now since we started talking about this podcast, so that was, it was a Tome Group, but now it is OSM Tome. The reason being, there are two Norwegian companies, they have merged now. So one is OSM and one is Tome. So they have already merged. And that is why the new name is OSM Tome at present. So at OSM
Thank
Tome,
you.
Now these are the Norwegian owners, Norwegian companies, and basically we are ship managers. So we are managing a lot of ships. Actually, the number is crossing 1,000 ships we are managing. And globally,
workforce,
it's a big number. And we are one of those leading ship managers in the maritime industry at present. I think probably we'll be a third or fourth number. And we have around 31,000 employees globally. We having... almost 70 different nationalities working in the company. Offices in 22 countries.
Wow, okay, so...
Okay. And we got a big presence.
Okay, so already there, you know, we can see the first signs of probably the challenges that you have when dealing with learning development. You have people all over the world of diverse nationalities, and of course, you probably have a very... large range of activities that you need to cover also. So, wow, that sounds like a challenge. So how did you progress your journey? How did it go from being, an engineer to a learning and development specialist? Specifically, I think your area of expertise is probably, safety, correct?
It covers all because I was an engineer. So basically, you can say on a board ship, I was like a technical head. So anything technical mm-hmm. was related to me. And yeah, when it comes to, mm-hmm. again, learning and development, so yeah, safety is always paramount for the shipping industry. We always say safety first and safety mm-hmm. always. So no matter whatever we do, whether we are a navigation officer or we are an engineer officer, or you are a cook on board a ship, doesn't matter. Safety is always first. Okay. And the good part now that you asked, you know, how I transited from being an engineer to, you know, L&D. So if you know, Kenny, the shipping is considered as one of the oldest profession in the world. If you see, traditionally, how, you know, you become, come into any trainings or learning and development being a domain expert. And for me, the transition was, again, just because I had experience of sailing out at sea 18 years. And out of that, almost 10 years, I was as a chief engineer. So I was a technical head on board a ship. That gives you a lot of experience on board a ship, a lot of knowledge, what needs to be done. And I think that was the reason I was able to transit to learning and development, just because I was being a domain expert. Mm-hmm. When I got an offer from the company to join as a L&D, that was something like an uncharted territory for me. You know, never thought about it, but I took the leap of faith and I decided, let me try. Why not? You know, when I have so much experience, I have so much things to give to my new generation. So why not? And mm-hmm. I'm happy that I took that decision and I thoroughly enjoy what I do now.
Okay. So basically what you did then basically was you applied then, you were a subject matter expert, so to say, and then had the opportunity to apply your knowledge in the learning development field. So for you, it's like, let's say to make it like if you had like so it's going from doing your master's to doing your PhD in another field, right? So to say?
Yeah. You can say, because you say you can talk about based on your experience also, you have seen a lot on board a ship during those 18 years. So yes, this is how the transition starts. But I will say learning is always a continuous. So I keep upgrading myself. I have connected with so many L&D professionals in the other categories, other corporates, to understand how the things are going over there. And they guided me well. I have done some other courses on my own for L&D to progress myself. And I think everything paid very well for me to presently where I am at present.
Okay, fantastic. So let's take a journey through your industry with a focus on safety. So let's use that kind of to segue over into learning and development. So we'll use that as a core sample. Or a point of explanation from which to start. So what are some of the most common challenges, safety challenges that are faced by ships and their crews?
Like I started with, you know, when we say about safety, it's not just a catchphrase that we say safety first. It always instill from the day one when you get into a maritime college. Safety is always a paramount. Mm-hmm. And okay, as an engineer, you may go different technical skills. As a navigation officer, you may do some different other navigational skills. But there are some skills which is common to all, like safety training, you know, survival skills out mm-hmm. at sea. Suppose in case something happens on your vessel go down, how will you survive in the middle of the ocean using your lifeboat? Or, you know, survive for a few days over there. And then there is a firefighting. How to fight a fire on board a ship. Medical first aid, very important. we don't have any doctor sailing with us. It's one of the officers who's been trained. Yeah. So they have been trained.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So more on the medical side, but everyone has to go this basic training. So like I mentioned a few minutes back, even if you're joining as a cook, you need to go through this firefighting, survival skills, medical first aid. It is paramount for everyone. And these are like mandatory trainings. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the first takeaways I have here is that where other industries often try to, I think, be a little bit more efficient by cross-training individuals on different responsibilities. For you in the maritime industry, that is a core component of your everyday activities, whereas other companies might, you know, see it as an add-on. For you, it's your core component to functioning as such, because you have your main role on your ship to be your engineer, to be can you give me some more activities? To be the captain, navigation officer, okay, and so forth. But each one of these also entails that you have further responsibilities which help and are crucial to the operation of a ship. Fascinating. Okay, so could you share like a notable instance where your training methods made a significant difference in the safety practice of the maritime workforce?
Okay. You see, one of the like the most important challenge over here is on board a ship, there is a limitation for everything, limited number of resources. Mm-hmm. Whether we talk about it's a seafarer, whether it's about a fuel on board a ship, whether it's a food, even your equipments or spares, everything is in just limited number. So you need to plan up everything. You need to have a backups. Just in time concept doesn't work on board a ship. You can't expect an Uber Eat coming and delivering you in the middle of Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
Yeah. And
so,
yeah.
Continues.
So, and sometimes when you have a real emergency, I have seen times when we worked continuously for more than 24 hours. And all again, so, have just those limited number of people.
Okay. So, we said that you need to cross train, and that is, like you said, it's essential. And it is also essential that basically you don't have the possibility. You said you have limited resources, so you always have to work with a finite amount of resources. And you have to make sure that these resources are enough to fulfill your mission. Okay. And how do you go about training all these individuals? So you have, of course, classically... face-to-face training might not always be feasible. So how do you ensure safety training or training as such? And how do you make this engaging and impactful for your maritime personnel?
So you see, first of all, the training, especially in the maritime industry, is driven by compliance. So like I said, many trainings are mandatory. If you do not do these trainings, you cannot join a ship, not even as a cleaner, I can assure you. So you need to have this. But now when I come to once I have done my maritime college, then I will go on board a ship. I will complete my some sea time as a trainee. That can vary from, let's say, 6 months to 20 months, depending what I'm planning to be. And then I have to come back to college and do my certificate of competency. So again, there are some theories, some exams, everything, and I get my COC, Certificate of Competency. But that doesn't end over here. Huh? I have to keep on repeat this one. I will go on back to the sea. I will do some sea time, and I will come back for promotion, and I will get my new COC till the time I become a captain or a chief engineer. So this COC journey continues.
Okay.
So learning continues.
Okay. So in comparison to maybe other industries, you already had a very blended learning approach because you always had to mesh basically your on-site training with, first theoretical training, which is basically a face-to-face training. Then you have practical training on your job, so to say. And you've probably made advances also with, you know, modern technologies to offer training while on board the ships. We'll get to that in a second. But what creative methods have you developed that might be unique to your industry in your learning development, so in training your individuals?
So that's a really, really good one, because with the advancement of technology also, we are getting a lot of support from there. So simulators are coming because, you see, we need to create that environment, how the people will react in those situations. So we have a lot of immersive learning. We are doing case studies. Even like you may hear nowadays, like some incident happened in the maritime industry. So we do develop sometime trainings based on those case. What went wrong? What should have been done? So we are doing case studies. We are doing using simulators, like how a ship bridge will look like. And actually, there are all the equipments working in a simulator where we recreate those situation and people act. There are role plays people will be doing. Also, now with the VR and AR, because there are so many people, like especially the trainees who haven't yet joined their first ship, they want to know how this equipment will, how to operate or something. So using VR, AR technologies also, we are training them in the colleges and in the company. So a lot is happening in the training side, I can say, how the technology is advancing. And especially when you see the attention span of a human mind is keep on reducing now. You know, it has come down to a few seconds.
Yes, that's
so you
true.
You have to be very, proactive to make sure the learner stays in your training. It has to give some meaningful takeaways for them that why it is important. What is in it for me?
Okay. So how, during your time now, how long have you been in your position as in the learning and development section?
So it's a third year I'm running in learning and development.
Third year. So in these 3 years, what have you already observed for changes? So you probably came in with a certain set point. Have you in these 3 years already seen significant changes? Like, for example, this is not a very good example, but one of the challenges, for example, that most companies had to deal with was, of course, COVID, and how then they suddenly had to quickly mobilize their workforce or enable their workforce to work outside of offices. So you saw a very sharp uptake, basically, in remote office capabilities and so forth. What have you observed in the 3 years, in your case, in the maritime industry and in learning development, where you've said, that you've alluded to at first, that you had, all various kinds of training. So what have you observed there?
And say with the COVID, I will say it pushed the technology at least a decade ahead. You see, pre-COVID, nobody was thinking of, working from home concept, or I can say the training from home also, or you learn as a trainer from home. Whatever was happening in the maritime industry, it was classroom-based. You have to be physically present and all the trainings were happening. But yeah, the moment the COVID came, so everything need to be shifted. And in a very traditional environment, the trainings were typical, how you show the presentation, PPTs, and people just go through this presentation. And this is how the trainings were happening in the very traditional style. But in the last 3 years, what we have noticed, if I take example of YouTube and Insta, now they have started with like YouTube Shorts or Instagram Reels that are less than 1 minute. So just to give you an example, we launched a new software, what we are using in our company, and we wanted to launch a training module for that. And our L&D team decided to do it in some more modern way. So what we did, we created a micro learnings. So instead of making a long video, people come and watched those videos. We made them more interactive videos, and we made it like a shorts, less than a minute or just 1 minute or 1.5 minutes, something like this. And believe me, when we launched those modules, we gave it to all our workforce. We got a very fantastic response from everyone. They appreciate it because it's very point to point. Let's say I have to do some activity, they will just come, watch this video, how to do this in this software, and they just perform. So it was like a micro learning that was introduced. Also, we started exploring on the AR, VR technologies, web-based. All these trainings were happening earlier on classroom-based, so there was equipment available, on-site. But now when I wanted to do these trainings on a web-based, the challenge I had, I was not having the equipment available for me to demonstrate like a 3D object where they can also operate. So we started looking to create this 3D object with IT companies. So, I mean, using a technology, and we created some 3D objects, and now we are using, now when we are having session, so people are sitting in different locations in the globe and we are conducting training. It's really good to see how we have advanced.
Okay, so you've lucked out then. You've gone into a new field that you've conquered, so to say, you're now part of a completely new push. You're practically part of a revolution in your field of work. Although I must say, given the history of what you said previously, how your industry trains and the necessity of having people, you know, being on site and then also being off site again, I would have actually thought that you would be further along in the sense of it wouldn't have taken COVID to push the matter, to accelerate the matter or act as a catalyst. I thought you would be more on the forefront of using such technologies.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, we decided, you know, initially everything went online, but then we took a call. There are some trainings we prefer to have it a classroom based because there we need to show some equipment. We need to have a human interaction. So some things we have moved back to the classroom, but we have decided some things are done very well online. And we are happy with that. Even the learners are happy with that. And it's a win-win situation for everyone.
Well, I guess that's you answered one key question, engagement. And I guess if you get a positive feedback, that means whatever you're doing is working. So this brings you now finally to the point that it took about 20 minutes to think about. You mentioned the word compliance. And here I come back to what I was thinking. My question to you would have been, or is now at this point, does compliance or the need to have these resetting courses and tasks, does this make planning or learning and development easier for you or harder? Because you have a set of definitions, rules, and regulations in place which you have to adhere to. So does that make it easier or harder? Because if you have a known quantity, so that might make it easier to plan with that known quantity. On the other hand, it might make it more, it might make it harder to be innovative because you're restricted by this known quantity. So how would you say compliance influences? Does it make it easier or harder?
So in my personal opinion, compliance is always making things easier because, you see, it's setting up an international standard for all the nationalities, because you see different countries, they have different education system. So at least our baseline is same for everywhere because we are coming with the international standards for the maritime industry. Now, when we talk about the training, so actually as a company, what we do add-on trainings on top of the compliance training. So compliance training is like mandatory for a seafarers to do that. So they are doing their on their own all this, but what we do is more like our value added trainings which we want to keep them updated with the latest trend, latest changes in the industry. So these are more like our in-house trainings, what we are conducting. And so we have a freedom to build this training on top of the compliance training. So I am in favor that, you know, it's like making us more easier for us.
Okay. So basically you get to you get to build off of that then in essence. So in essence, somebody already has done the work for you and you get to build off their work, basically having set up a standard for a global standard, so to say. So you don't have to think about how to integrate this and that and this and so forth and so on. How about language? Is that also a standard? Have you just established for your company English as a standard language, or do you differentiate there for, you have so diverse crews, diverse responsibilities, probably languages from across the globe. How do you deal with that?
So you see, English has been recognized as the official language. All of our standard operating procedures, mm-hmm. our manuals, everything is in English. And even in the non-English speaking countries, there are maritime English courses are being conducted. So we make sure they have those basic standards. And especially like I mentioned, when we are working on board a ship, you can have maybe 5 different nationalities. I used to be sometimes a single Indian on board a ship. And you don't have anyone to talk to in your native language. So English is like, okay. So everyone is pretty much okay with that. And I think everyone has accepted English more. But yeah, when you have same nationalities, probably you may talk with them to explain something in more better way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, English still remains like our official language.
Okay. So that at least solves that problem. You have a unique industry there with a maritime industry and unique challenges. But I'm glad I came back to this, to what I had thought, and that was, the topic compliance. And I think you helped clarify for our listeners there then that compliance for you is something that's very beneficial. Because I guess one of the main things is that it sets a level playing field. There are already set expectations and a set standard that you get to work off of. So I would imagine, like I said already, that it saves you a lot of work. Although each company is specific, so you get to build on that. So you still have unique challenges. What would you, in your experience now, say is one of the most unique challenges you faced in delivering training, in delivering training, either let's take a look at it from two aspects, I guess. One would be on-site. Was there any unique training that you recall delivering in a face-to-face version that you would maybe not see in another industry? And what would be a unique training that you recall delivering offsite? So I assume you do trainings while the ships are at sea. So let's take a look at those two situations.
Okay, so that's a great point, And first of all, I would like to, highlight you one another important thing, which you, I'm sure none of you will be aware of. You see, any industry, when you go for a training, then you are normally going on your work days, right? And you attend some training, mm-hmm. that part of your job and everything. And how things work in the shipping industry, most of the maritime companies, how they work, the salary is paid only while you are on board a ship. So once you are on your holiday, it's not paid holidays, okay? It's most of the companies. So actually, you can say we are more like contractual workforce. Now you see the challenge comes. Most of our trainings again happens when you are on your leave. So imagine a seafarer who did a 6-month contract on board a ship, and now he's home for, let's say, 2 months or a 3 month on a holiday where he's not being paid. And now you ask him to come down for a 10-day course, attend in a classroom. So now what he's looking at, he is using his family time and, of course,
own funds.
No commercials involved over here. So basically, you are just coming to attend your training. So that is one of the biggest
challenges. Wow. So how do you manage that challenge? Or is that something that, once again, is maybe for outsiders, it's like, wow, that's crazy. But for, you know, the maritime industry, it's pretty much an established standard that's, you know, steeped in a long history or something like that. How do you get around that, or how do you deal with that?
So, yeah, that's now everything. So, see, whenever we design any training, so we have to make sure that our participant seafarer, they should have a clear understanding how this training gonna enhance their job, how it's gonna make their life more easier on board a ship. See, unless until there is a internal motivation for them to attend, it just become a to-do list for them, you know, because somebody is pushing them for the training. And in this dynamic learning landscape, you know, where, you know, trainings are moving just from presentations and all this theory, we want to make sure that every minute what they spend over here is worthwhile for them.
Okay.
So they get this, yeah, it's very difficult for them to come to trainings.
Okay. So is it when they do come to training, what does the company pay for while they're in training? Is that a paid for the training for those 10 days, or is that not paid for, or how's that work?
See, again, the different companies have different guidelines. So normally, if any traveling to come for a training, lodging, food, everything is borne by the company. Now, there are some companies, they pay some like a stipend kind of a thing when you are attending a training, but there are some companies, they do not pay. So it all depends from company to company policies. But again, wow. I will say,
okay,
the motivation should be there. Your training should be designed something like this, that the seafarer should feel interested in attending that training. For example, if I take an example of an IT industry, an IT guy, he knows if that person is not enhancing their knowledge or skill, soon they will be outdated in the market. They will not survive. So they know they have to upskill themselves. So something like this, we are also trying to work hard to make sure that seafarer feel motivated to come to these trainings, even they have to come on their own.
Okay. But now this is kind of a circular thing, though, because you have, on the other hand, you have compliance. So that means you actually, there are certain trainings that you absolutely have to go to, because if you don't, you don't get certified, which means you can't continue working in your current position, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So, but now I would say then, but you also have other trainings, which I think we addressed now that you addressed previously what you were saying, that motivate the learner to basically learn to come in and do those trainings because they see added benefit. Is this added benefit part of like a development path that you have for the various positions then? So you say, okay, if you want to be like, I'm sorry if I use this term incorrectly, like crew chief. I don't know if that exists in the maritime world. Does that exist, or is that a position, or how would you, do you have two positions that you could name real quick that would consist a hierarchy? So you start as sailor and move up to a first mate, or what would a correct?
That's right.
That would be a correct definition? Okay, so I got lucky on that one. So moving from sailor to first mate, you have then, for those individuals, do you have then a clear defined career path that they need to follow, and trainings, of course, that they need to take in order to get to that?
Yeah. So you see, again, like I mentioned some time back, so there are some compliance training and you get your certificate of competencies when you are growing up in that career. But these are mandatory, and these responsibility to do this one, complete this training, lies with the seafarer. For example, if I'm hiring you as a captain and on this particular ship, I will make sure that before hiring, you have all the compliance training with you already in place. But now I want to make sure that, you know, you have some company specific training or what is very specific to my company, or these are some value added knowledge or some challenges what we faced in the past that we want to share with you. So we will enroll you on those specific training. So these are more like additional trainings, value added, company specific. But compliance training, it's the responsibility of the seafarer to do that, because that is only how they will get a job. Otherwise, no.
Okay. Then let me ask another question to maybe understand your industry, because this I'm going down a rabbit hole because this opened up another question for me. And the question is then the maritime industry, those people that are actually on the ships and so forth, is that more like a freelance activity that you... And you said like a contractor activity. Does that mean that they often switch to various they give their services to different different companies at different points, or do you have or do you retain your employees over a longer period of time? Is there a split between that?
Yeah, so it's actually a contractual one, and the seafarers are free to move from one company to another company if they feel like. So once, let's say they have done one contract on one company and they come back home and they decided to move to another company, I mean, they are free because they are working on a contract. But the retention is very important, because now, like, we are hiring on someone new and then training as per our company specific, it again requires a lot of efforts from our side also as a company. So we look very good at to have the retention of our seafarers. And there are people, I know some of my friends, they sometimes have changed company after every two contracts. And I know some people who have continued in the same company for 25 years also. So there are both cases available. So, but there is a freedom from both sides.
Okay. When you first described it, that was the first thought that came to me, is that you kind of work as an individual contractor. So at the end of your contract, you can choose, to pick up and provide your service or give your service to somebody else. So so that was the reason that I had that question. But of course, like you said, there's a lot of specific things that you have. So of course, it behooves you as a company to retain those individuals, because otherwise you constantly have to retrain new individuals and so forth and so on. So that makes it really, really tough. Okay, so that was kind of like the on-site experience that you said that you had a specific challenge. What about the remote situation? There you still had an example that you were going to explain.
So I think with the remote, you mean like how we do our onboard trainings, right?
Yes. Well, okay. And the irony of this is that the word onboarding for you is different than I would normally use it. So in this case, onboard means literally on ship, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I will take it as an onboard a ship. So you see, we have our LMS platform also, where we have a lot of trainings. So people can go and view. Some are, again, activity based also, where you may perform some activity and update your findings, your answers. So this is one way also to do. Also, we have something like a safety coach program. And this is more like they go on board and they sail with the vessel. So these trainers, what they do absorb what you are doing on board a ship. And then they try to find the gap. Where is the gap? What is the need? So I mean, it's not that they have to cover everything, but they see, okay, these are the gaps they noticed. And then they try to help you in doing those things rightly. So basically, it's like on-site learning with those trainers. So these program also keep running. So these people go. So they, it's like they audit also, and then they train you also. So together.
Wow. Okay. So that's fairly unique that you have. I have to think about that. So you have coachings, which coaches that are basically assigned to ships to basically help individuals or crews in certain activities, and they monitor and then they coach those situations. Fantastic. Yeah. Okay. So for people on ships, you once, like you said, you have access to the LMS, so you can do online trainings, which you now provide. But what you have that's unique to your industry are coaches that come on board the ships to perform specific trainings.
Yep.
Wow. So, okay. That's interesting. Although, do we have, is there, maybe I'm overemphasizing that, but I do think that's pretty unique because most situations from my personal experience, the coaching is basically that somebody comes in into a face-to-face session and just basically, you know, rattles off a topic, you know, be it project management, be it this, and that's it. And, you know, of course, you get a couple tips, but I think what's unique in your situation is that that they actually observe. It's kind of like having your own mentor on board for a specific exactly. activity for a certain amount of time, right? So
right.
You get somebody that comes in there and watches what you do, and then not only gives you a training on that, but also then observes your training and gives you highly specialized, individualized training because he's observing you in that moment. Fantastic.
Exactly.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I think you nailed it on that one. 10 points for you on that one, Devish. That one absolutely nailed that question. Okay. So I think we're now getting a little bit to the end of our podcast. So let's wrap this up with is there anything that you think that you could transfer from your experience in learning and development in the maritime industry to our podcast listeners in their daily life? What takeaway would you give them?
Oh, that's a really
good one. 2 points.
Okay. So
is there something that you could transfer? Okay.
Yeah. So first one, what straight away comes to my mind when I see, like, you know, coming to office job, and I've seen that a lot. You see, risk is everywhere, whether you are on a ship, whether you are in office, or you are working at the comfort of your home. So risk is everywhere. And to navigate this risk, you need to stay fully engaged in your present moment. So what I'm trying to come to the point is that avoid the temptation of juggling in between multiple tasks simultaneously, because multitasking, it's a really
interesting. Okay.
It's a myth. And I can tell you from my personal experience, we have seen numerous accidents that can be attributed to this distraction. So please focus on whatever you are doing in that moment.
Okay, that's a completely new one. I think I like that one. Interesting. Nobody's mentioned that on one of our podcasts, and it's a new take on something that I think is, you know, probably once again makes it, it's one of those things that are common sense, but in our times of all this, you know. It's sometimes we forget to apply common sense, but on the other hand, the trajectory of technology and so forth has also taken us to the point where multitasking is one of those things that I think is in our daily lives, you know, because people watch TV and at the same time they're texting. And I had a reference to that, you know, is people go from trying to be in the here and now, they go to being in the here and everywhere, so to say. So I think that's a very, very good piece of information. Okay, second one.
So second one, I will say learning is, it's an unending journey that it should never come to a halt. Embrace the idea of continuous learning, nurturing your knowledge and skills, whether it is acquiring a new skill or pursuing a hobby, always keep your learning question high. So LQ.
Okay. Okay, cool. I like that. I think that's probably, you probably have that written somewhere, right? As a poster.
Yeah.
Motivational poster.
It was in my mind. Yeah, it was in my mind. I just actually penned it down for this podcast only. So yes, I wanted to make sure that there must be some takeaway for the listeners.
I think, Devish, you nailed it there. I think you gave us a really, really interesting insight on your industry, on the challenges you have, on the unique challenges you have, on how you face those challenges and basically are able to, navigate those challenges in a good way. For me, I've learned a lot of new things. I also would like to thank you very much for those two takeaways. I think that brings it back into a really nice perspective. It brings us back, I think, a little bit back down to earth in that sense. So thank you very much for those two takeaways. And in the final question that I have for you is, do you have a recommendation for another either podcast guest that you could recommend or a topic that you think that we should explore and cover on this podcast? So those are your two options. You don't have to asking you for another person that would join the podcast is a little hard. So you can do that offline. So let me reduce it to one question. If you have a guest in mind, then of course you can recommend that guest offline, because that would, you'd have to coordinate that first. You just can't say, call out your buddy there and say, this guy, and he doesn't know anything about it. So let's focus on the second part of the question. That would be, do you have a topic that you think that we should cover or that you think would be of interest to other listeners also?
So, yeah, I mean, what I was thinking of, you see, in this era of technology, how this advancement is going on, and especially the shortening the attention span of the human mind. So learning and development is in the constant flux. And what worked in the past will not work in the future. That is for sure. So I would love to hear more about from someone who's coming on your podcast, more about gamification in the learning, how to have more immersive learning, and of course, new technologies, how they can help in learning and development. So these new cutting edge technologies, how they are reshaping the world, I would love to hear more about it.
Okay. And maybe AI in the learning and development. Well, I mean, we are seeing trend, you know, I think we already had, at least I talked about the topic of gamification several times, and that there's generally, that is still a very, very hot topic and often discussed. I think it's still a buzzword, although having talked about it a couple times in the last couple of years, I think that topic is sometimes a little overused because it's still very present in the minds of people. Although from my discussion, I had a very interesting discussion with an individual, and the thing that there's two things about gamification that I found out, and one is the idea of that the content is presented in like a game-like manner, and that makes it more interesting. And the other mindset was actually that in our evolution, we have learned, or we learn through games. So by virtue of a game, be it, you know, hopscotch or maybe, you know, whatever, playing football or soccer, we learn hand-eye coordination, so it's through the game as such that we learn a certain activity or gain a certain skill. So those were the two different approaches, which I thought was interesting. But I'll take that up again. And I think what coming out of our conversation, which I would like the most is either immersive learning or how do we deal with the short attention spans? This constant need for multitasking and so forth. How do we bring it back to focus on one topic? Because I can imagine on a ship, that would probably be one of the key things. I said a computer, so if I send an email to the wrong individual, then it's not probably as fatal as if I, put in the wrong coordinates in the ship or something, or have the incorrect speed when moving into the harbor or something like that. I mean, I can really relate to the fact that in your industry, the focus, especially for your frontline workers, has to be immense. Focus on the task. Okay. So Devish, thank you very, very much for partaking in this podcast, for being available. Like I said, our podcast has gone really international because you're sitting in Delhi, which I've had a chance to visit. Very, very beautiful city. Was a lot of fun, although I have to say I've only had the opportunity to be there for a week. But it was absolutely amazing to experience. It kind of reset my life because it reset my mindset for a while because in Delhi, there were so many people that there had to be an absolutely, for me, a very organic flow of movement. In Germany, we're very much rule-based. So there's a sign every 5 meters telling you what to do. And how to do it, and attention. And in Delhi, it was more like there were a couple signs there, but things flowed because there were just so many people that I don't think, especially traffic regulations, were that easy to follow. Near impossible. So very interesting experience on that point. Plus, got to visit Taj Mahal. So that was really beautiful too. Okay, so thank you very much, Devish, again. It was an exciting and interesting podcast. I feel like I've gained a little bit of insight and knowledge on what you do and, like I said, your challenges. So to our listeners, as always, if you like the podcast, smash the like button or even better, subscribe. Thanks for listening. And next time, that was The Learning Curve with me, Kenny. So hope to hear from you soon. Thanks a lot and bye.
This podcast is brought to you by MC Learning, and we will release a new episode every month. I'm your host, Kenneth Littlepage. Editorial planning and script by Simon Breslaw and Vanessa Klaes. Post-production and design, Lars Knuck. If you liked the episode, we would be happy if you subscribe to our podcast and recommend it to your friends and colleagues.